Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigo.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we come to you from the studios of Community Radio, KHOI. In beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, community radio is a great invention, and we are glad to be part of it. Well, Donna, here comes summer.
Oh, I hope so.
I hope so,
too. Now that we didn't really have spring, but, you know.
Back and forth. But here is summer, and we can look forward to a lot of things. One of the things we can look forward to, I don't know about you, but summer garage sales. I don't know if they happen all over the country, but people move around a lot, and heaven knows we all have a lot of stuff. Stuff. And garage sales happen in the summer. And I have a little news item here from the Donald in the Kitchen News Department about a real doozy of a garage sale. Martha Stewart had a garage sale.
Woo-hoo, that must have been a garage sale to end all garage sales.
It was. Now, remember, this woman has staff, okay? Certainly she didn't
do this.
Well,
she has, I'm sure, multiple houses. Oh, so where was this?
Well, she has this farm called Katona Farm in, it's 50 miles north of New York City.
Oh, okay. In Katona, okay.
Katona, okay. But she's kind of downsizing. The woman is 80 years old, so more power to her, and so she's downsizing.
Not selling her Arikana chickens, is she?
Well, I think she's kind of, I don't know what was on the garage sale.
Rehomed them.
Quote, of course, this is her selling the garage sale. Beautiful glassware, beautiful dishes, beautiful furniture, and a wide range of rugs, mirrors, books, artwork, and outdoor furniture, and a lot of the props that she used for the television show. So it was quite a gathering. Yes, she had a fine showing, and believe it or not, now don't let this disappoint you, because you may not make this much at your garage sale, but she netted $800,000 for charity, so good for her.
Oh, and who did she give it to?
Two benefited the Martha Stewart Center for Living at Mount Sinai Hospital. So there we go.
Okay, so you go to the hospital for living. Okay.
Something.
Martha Stewart Living. Okay, yeah. Right, that's the name of her company. Oh, dear.
What a play on words.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
Okay.
Whew. So, garage sales, summer. Oh, here, evidently this is also the season for, and this happens every now and then, book burnings, book bannings, book editing and book squashing seems to be going on a lot here. And I want to do a shout out. You probably heard about this in the news. Margaret Atwood released a fireproof copy of The Handmaid's Tale to combat the right-wing book banning spate that we seem to have here.
Well, that's good. There'll be one copy left existing on the planet.
Well, and that book is quite timely now. Actually, she has a quote here that says, I thought my tale of oppressed women and birth and a dystopian future like that was all made up. She says, now things are getting pretty scary. So she wanted to make sure that one of her books would last. So there's a great picture of her. Margaret Atwood is a sweet, diminutive woman. There's a great picture of here with her with a blowtorch trying to incinerate her specially made book, and she can't do it. This is also for charity. The money for selling this one-of-a-kind copy, and it's pretty special, goes to Pen America. That's a writer's group.
Oh, she's supporting the writers with
right.
it.
Right. For her. Free expression advocacy group. And the reason this is such a fancy special book, it is flame-proof. The flame-proof copy is made of thin sheets of cinefoil, an aluminum product, and sewn together using nickel copper wire. So we hope that a book will be around for a long time. Two news items there. Yes, it is.
Maybe we'll go back to illuminated manuscripts on metal or something.
Oh, we might have to do that.
It'll be all handmade books.
We get creative. Also, another little joyful thing, much closer to home, this weekend, there was a great barn dance that happened. The Central Iowa Barn Dance had a barn dance on Saturday, and it was well attended. We had a wonderful time. The Barn All Band played. It was fantastic. And this dance was well attended. The dance, the previous month, in April, just as we were going to start the dance, there was a tornado warning that barreled through Ames, and the attendance was kind of sparse. But this time, weather was beautiful, dancers were beautiful, the music was great. It's a great way to start the summer. So, thinking of summer things, let's look forward to summer food. Donna, let's talk a bit about strawberries.
Well, we're moving nicely through the rhubarb, which then fades into the strawberry rhubarb, which then goes into the strawberry on strawberries, jamberry, strawberry. You know, remember that book? I think we read it on air once. The Jamberry, it's a children's book.
You did a lovely job.
Yeah. Anyway, it's brambles and rambles of strawberries. So, who do we think of when we go berries? Berry Patch. So we called Judy Henry because in the middle of Iowa, she is our local. She and her husband Dean have the local U pick. So they start with, actually they're picking rhubarb now, and then they go all the way through apple season and pumpkins. So she said the strawberries, and her strawberries are really good because, all right, I have to say this, right? We have strawberries year round. I'm old enough that when I was a child, we still had Aunt Em's strawberry patch. You know, my Aunt Emma had the strawberries. And so there was a month of the year when we could pick and have real strawberries. And this is true everywhere. And then it's no longer true. So we can eat berries of varying quality, all the berries, all the year round. But I have to say, I bought a package of organic or not organic, doesn't really matter, strawberries last week that had no flavor.
Right.
Cardboard.
Right. I refer to those as
photo op.
Strawberry-like objects.
Yes.
You know, they look great, like that. But the taste is really, and actually that's nice. We can
and strawberries are on the environmental working group of one of the most heavily sprayed things, so I do try to buy organic. But I really hardly ever buy strawberries when they're not in season, which means the month coming is in a very exciting time. It's the time of the year when you can have strawberries. Now, there will be some at the farmer's market, probably, too. Or you can go out to the... I would suggest looking on their website. I Googled the Berry Patch Nevada, because there's berry patches all over the country. But to get the right one... Or Berry Patch Nevada, Iowa, or something like that, because she has a little calendar on there. But she did say the strawberries are late. They look good, but probably not before mid-June. So we are kind of in advance here, but looking forward to it.
We definitely are looking forward to it. And for people that have the know-how to do it well, a large field that is well taken care of, well irrigated, and... strawberries are kind of tricky. I mean, they propagate from runners, and you kind of have to watch where they go, and they need to be weeded.
I think they have some varieties to prolong the season a little bit, too, right?
And
they know what
variety.
They're doing.
They know what they're doing.
Yep.
Good.
Yep. And it's a gorgeous place to go. It's a wonderful family thing to do, and having fresh berries at least once in the season is a big deal.
And they always taste better when you get really hot with the sun on your back, picking them yourself. They just plain taste better. Trust me.
Yeah.
So what are some ways we can, besides just popping them into our mouths, which is really a wonderful way to do things, what are some other things we can do with strawberries?
Well, What is the classic?
Strawberry shortcake.
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss it for the world. And, of course, we make our own shortcake. Right, Lana?
We do. We
don't buy any of that spongy stuff from the grocery. I mean, because you're going to get berries once a year like this. You might as well do the whole hog, right?
Yeah, the little spongy round thing, that it's cake, yeah. You can make one of those little spongy cakes if you'd like. But I like to make just a baking powder biscuit, sweet baking powder biscuit.
Right, I will use either a biscuit or even a very rich scone recipe.
Yes.
You know, it's basically flour, leavening, which is baking powder, soda, a little salt. You put a little sugar in the shortbread because you want it to be sweet for the, and then you're shortening, which is your lard, or butter.
Butter is good.
Cream.
Once a year.
Yep, like that.
And mixing it all together with a pastry knife, is that what you call it? The thing that has multiple wires on it.
Pastry cutter.
That's an easy way to do it.
Yeah, you can use forks if you don't handle it too much, you can use your fingers. It's and I, of course, like to use whole wheat pastry flour, or at least our early morning or harvest local flour, because it's really fresh. So you can have fresh local flour, fresh local strawberries, and then what else do you put on it, Lana?
Oh, we are moving on to another of the food groups that I think is very important. Cream.
Yes. It can either be just thick cream poured on it,
mm-hmm.
which is always good because it really soaks into everything, or you can make whipped cream, mm-hmm. right? So I like to do... I usually sweeten my... Well, let's go back to the strawberries, because this is an important point. You know, you have to... You rinse them very quickly and not much at all, right? You don't want to waterlog them. And then kind of, you know, spread them out to dry a little bit. And then, you know, take a paring knife and pull the little... What's the name for the thing at the top? Is it called calyx? I don't know what it's called.
Oh, the little green bits. I don't know what they're
called. Anyway, you have to take that part out. And then usually I cut them in half. Put them in a bowl and sprinkle them with sugar. Now, when you sprinkle them with sugar, they juice out, which is what you want for strawberry cake, right? Shortcake. Now, into that sugar and berry mix. Now, first of all, I do not put a lot of sugar, but that's where I put the sugar. I put a little in the shortcake and a little in the strawberries. But if your strawberries are really ripe and really fresh, they have their own flavor. You don't want to sugar them up too much and cover it. So I put sugar, and I'll just say not too much because everybody has a different opinion about that. Plus, it depends. Some berries have a slightly more sharp flavor than others. You know, that's varietal.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I'm sure the weather has some influence on that too. And then this is a classic thing that the Italians do. You put a little black pepper. Now, I'm not talking enough that you taste the black pepper. It leaves an under kind of, so the flavor just pops a little bit. And they also, if you have a good balsamic vinaigrette, not the cheap stuff you put in your salad, but a nice one, right? I'm not a $500 bottle, but just something, you know, you put a tiny, tiny little bit of that in. And that is a classic way to serve strawberries for any dessert in Italy. So I like to do that. And then, you know, you've got your shortcake. Now, your shortcake does offer also opportunities. You could put in vanilla. You could put in, I wouldn't get too carried away because, you know, we don't want to cover the flavor of the berries. But sometimes I put like a pinch of coriander in it or something like that. Not too much, right?
This is into the whipped cream.
No. Oh. I'm still on the shortcake.
Oh, you're still on the
shortcake. I'm still on the shortcake.
Okay.
You could also crumple some dried lemon verbena into the shortcake, too. That's another option. Now, for the cream, you have two choices. Whether you just have a cold cream that you pour on. You can pour just heavy cream on and put nothing in it, and it will be delicious, right? Or you can infuse your cream. My favorite would be rose geranium, which Lana and I both grow, which is wonderful with strawberries.
That's a good combination.
It really, really is. Should you have an excess and you want to make strawberry jam, rose geranium strawberry jam is like to die for. Absolutely. The be all and the end all. I used to make it a lot when I was in California, where, of course, they have a lot of strawberries and a longer strawberry growing season. So to do the rose geranium in the whipped cream, you take the cream, put it in a heavy bottom saucepan, and you take a few leaves of the rose geranium and you heat the cream. You don't want to boil it. You do get it pretty hot, and then you have the leaves in it until they like wilt and turn gray. You just leave it in there, take it off the heat, let it come to room temperature, then put it in the fridge. Then once it's completely cold, do not try to whip it before it's completely chilled. You have to let it completely chill. And then I just take the, you can strain it and press on the leaves in the strainer to get as much rose geranium flavor out as you want. Or I just, they're kind of big, those leaves, so I just grab them and squeeze them to get, you know, the remaining flavor out. That gives you a rose geranium whipped cream. So then you whip it like you do regular whipped cream. Put a little bit of sugar in it. You can add a little vanilla if you really, really want to. Or you can just whipped cream with no sweetening in it, especially if your cake and your strawberries are sweet. That's always a nice alternative. Or you can just make a vanilla whipped cream. Or you can do other flavorings. It's endless.
It's all good. And then you have the pleasure of licking the beater.
Yes. We used to fight over that.
Well, there is another alternative. There is an alternative. And this is a great alternative. You found a good ice cream recipe, Donna.
Well, okay, it's summer. We might as well start on ice cream. Now, I have a home version of a... Oh boy, it's a humdinger of an Italian ice cream gelato maker, and I use it quite a lot. However, the certainly less expensive and very pragmatic ones are the kind where you put the bowl in the freezer, and those work perfectly well as long as your ice cream mixture is quite chilled. Now, mine has the refrigeration unit in it, so it will chill it. But if you have the kind with the bowl you put in the freezer, you must make sure that your mix is completely chilled. Now, the New York Times has something called the Master Ice Cream Recipe, which I think is a pretty basic, you know, kind of good. It's Melissa Clark. I always trust her recipes. There's this 2 cups of heavy cream, 1 cup of whole milk, 2/3 cup of sugar, 1/8 teaspoon of sea salt, and 6 large egg yolks. And, you know, basically it's you're mixing, you put the eggs, the yolks aside and whip them up, and then you heat everything else, and then you slowly, you know, you put a tablespoon, I usually start with like 1/4 cup.
Some.
Of the hot milk, cream, sugar.
Warm stuff, yeah.
Yeah, into the eggs and start to, you know, you have to, it's called tempering them, basically, I think.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to shock them.
Well, no, you don't want to curdle them into, yeah. So you just keep putting a little of the hot and whisking it in until you get most of it combined, and then you put the whole thing back together and just heat it up a little more. And then some people are very fussy and pour it through the strainer in case there's any little coagulated bits. I'm usually not that fussy. But so the beauty of this, now there are all kinds of other homemade ways to make ice cream. Some people like, I think Jenny's ice cream or whatever she's called, she's a big deal. She puts sour cream in hers. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can fuddle around, but this is just the basic. And then in the New York Times, they go into the flavors that you can, they called aromatics. So you can make vanilla coffee or green tea ice cream, mint or basil ice cream, cinnamon ice cream, lemon or lime ice cream. Now, this is not sorbet. Then they have the strawberry or raspberry recipe. I did disagree with their strawberry and raspberry. Well, they said you have to strain it if it's raspberries to get the seeds out. I find I like to strain my strawberry ice cream. I think the seeds in the ice cream are a bit much. Yeah. So I strain my strawberry or raspberry. Then they've got peach or apricot, cherry, banana, chocolate, of course, chocolate hazelnut with guess what, Nutella in it, right? I don't know. Salted caramel and butterscotch bourbon, almond flavor, pistachio flavor, peanut butter, and coconut. So it basically takes you through some flavor families, sorry there, that you could do yourself. Like, I might be inclined to do rhubarb ice cream right now.
Oh, now I think that'd be good.
How about rhubarb rose geranium ice cream?
Now that sounds good. I have had rhubarb ice cream, and it's really good. It is perfect. Yes. Sometimes putting berries in ice cream, I'd rather have my berries like separate and let the
put
ice
it on
cream
top.
Mush on top. Because especially when they have chunks of fruit in there.
Right.
I don't like those cold, frozen chunks.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that at the end of the freezing process is pour more fruit in if you
put
want
more
to.
Fruit. But I kind of like my ice cream kind of.
Oh, yeah. Runny. If you made a fresh vanilla ice cream and then you poured that strawberry mixture with the one with the black pepper and the balsamic vinegar on top of it, that would be whoop-de-doo.
Now, see, berries are just a real treat, and it's so nice to have berries.
Well, you know, I did another thing. Okay, now here is the simplest thing in the world, and it sounds ridiculous, but it is very good. Take a vanilla ice cream, pour over it, like, for a good-sized scoop, like a tablespoon or less of really good, are you ready for this, olive oil?
No.
Yes, and then sprinkle on just a little bit of flaky sea salt.
Now, I would have never
thought. Okay, I swear, you got to go home and try it, Lonnie. You will not believe it. That is really good. But now my favorite thing on vanilla ice cream.
Yes, is?
Hot fudge sauce.
Oh, do tell.
I've been doing it lately. I don't know. I just got on a... I think I made cream puffs, put the vanilla ice cream in, then pour the hot fudge sauce on. That's really like gilding the lily, as my mother would say. But I want to say that making hot fudge sauce is really easy. Not the American way, which takes like cocoa powder and, corn syrup and this and that, and you boil and yada, wada, wada. The French way, basically you're making what they would call ganache. Mm. Now, you use a double boiler, but believe me, I don't own a double boiler. I have a saucepan, right? Mm-hmm. Like a 2 or 3 quart saucepan. And I take a metal mixing bowl that sits over. I mean, you want water in the saucepan boiling, but you do not want it to touch the bottom of the metal bowl. That's simple. That's your double boiler. Mm-hmm. And then you take some chocolate chips. Now, I like the bittersweet ones, because I just like my chocolate dark, dark, dark. But you can do it with milk chocolate. And then you add either cream or milk. Cream is typical. Mm-hmm. And the more cream you add and you melt the chocolate into it, the thinner your sauce is going to be. So you kind of need to keep going, and you can push it a little. And you could put some espresso coffee in it if you want. Or you could put a little... canela cinnamon if you want. You can put some vanilla. You can put some black pepper. Da 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 da. And then you've made ganache or hot sauce. And there it is, hot and ready to pour over the ice cream.
That is a lot. See, ganache sounds way too fancy, but that sounds
it's
really
so
easy.
It's so much simpler than the American standard recipes, which come out tasting like a slightly glorified bottle of the Hershey's sauce that you buy and squirt on.
Which is why they made the Hershey's sauce. There we go.
Right. I mean, it's a certain palate, you know, but this one, and, you know, then you can pick your favorite chocolate and make it the way you like it. Oh, I forgot one thing. Okay, about the ice cream recipe.
Okay.
You must use homogenized milk. I have tried for years, because a lot of our milk here is cream top, and a lot of our whipped cream is the cream from the cream top. And although it's all pasteurized, it is not homogenized. And I prefer the not homogenized milk when I am just drinking it and using it for almost everything else. I'll do a little pitch for Kelowna Organics here, which is all grass-fed and not homogenized. However, for making ice cream, If the milk is not homogenized, the fat globules do start to separate, and it just doesn't work.
Ah.
It's, you know, I mean, there's probably a way if you put it in your blender and ran it on high speed to emulsify it yourself and all that, yeah. But it's complicated, and it still might not work. So do buy the homogenized milk for your ice cream.
Words of wisdom from Donna Priestkin.
Let me tell you, I've made that mistake.
Okay. Oh, this is KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, and this is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about summer berries and all the good things about summer that we enjoy. Yes, we do. Ice cream and strawberries. We talked to Judy Henry at the Berry Patch on a past show about more summer goodness to come.
So welcome, Judy.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is a delightful time to be with you, Donna, and I appreciate you asking me here.
They have a wonderful U-Pick out at the Berry Patch. So, first of all, tell us how to get there.
If you live in or around Ames, take Highway 30 East about 9 miles and look for the blue sign that says Berry Patch right before Southwest 4th Street. Turn there and go south 4 miles. And then turn east to the Berry Patch. It should take you less than 30 minutes to get there.
And I have to say, it's a beautiful farm. It's just lovely. And it's very child-friendly. I used to take my grandson out there for apple picking and berry picking. And so what's it like for the children out there, Judy?
The children enjoy the blueberry crop, I think, as much as any crop out there. Except maybe apples. They always enjoy that also. But blueberries are about their height. They're very simple for them to pick, and they like eating them all the time. They
right picking off the bush.
Right off the bush. And they don't ever seem to tire of it or want to go home.
Now, Judy used to run a preschool out there, so you can see why some of them probably want to stay.
Right.
So it's a not only go for the berries and the other fruit, but it's also a wonderful family activity. Okay, and are we having a bumper blueberry crop this year?
We are this year. They are so easy to pick, and many, many berries on each plant. Sometimes they look like a cluster of grapes.
Oh, they've been wonderful. I've been eating them from the farmer's market in everything I can think of. And Judy brought in some blueberry muffins that they bake and sell out there. They're absolutely classic blueberry muffin. Couldn't be any more. And then we got raspberry season coming up, right?
We will have some red raspberries in the fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
The black raspberry season just passed.
Okay. And what about the yellow ones?
We have a few gold ones, and we put them on top of reds and call them the cyclone berries. You have red and gold, so that's
okay.
Good.
So, Judy and Dean have had this farm since, what did you say, 69 or something?
Mm-hmm. 69 or 70, yep.
Now they farm it with their son, Mike, and so they grow a lot of different fruit. I particularly like her gooseberries and her black and red and white currants, which you can hardly find anywhere else.
They are getting popular. People come for the black currants to make juice or jam, and they have a very intense flavor. You can also choose red currants, which are very pretty, made into a jelly, and I like to serve it at Christmas with turkey or pork. And we have a few white currant bushes.
It's the only place I've ever seen white currants.
And those little currants are clear or translucent, and they get almost a light pink color. They're very pretty.
And your gooseberries come in different colors too, don't they?
They do. They're very popular. People like them green or let them ripen to the red stage. And I like to have a mix and make a very delicious jam. And of course, they're very, very good in pie.
So that's that's one variety. And if they're green, they're not as ripe as if they're pink?
Right. They'll be a little less sweet, or some people say they're intense also. But if you like gooseberries, you like them green usually.
Well, my mama, who grew up in southeast Missouri, had a thing about gooseberries because she said they had a big gooseberry patch outside of where she grew up. And when I was, you know, still living at home, they were so rare, you hardly ever found them at all. And I don't think you can get them in the supermarket or anything, can you?
I've never seen them in the store, but Iowa has them naturally in the timbers, and they're quite little. So if you're picking them, they're almost just BB size, and you think, oh, I'll never get
enough
to make a pie.
Oh, I know, and they are tedious to clean.
Have to pick off both ends, but when you have them hybridized, they're almost as large as a green seedless grape, so they're easier to pick.
Yeah, I just picked a bunch and threw them in the freezer last week. I was congratulating myself as I went through this pile. You know, it really is tedious. You have to love doing it, but they're well worth it, and I'm looking forward to, you know, some cold winter day when I open the freezer and just want that burst of flavor, and I'll make a nice gooseberry pie. Now, on the black currants, I make a black currant jam, and I season it with, of course, sugar, a pinch of salt, very tiny, just to perk the flavor up, a little black pepper, and I grate in some lemon zest. I mean, enough that it's pronounced, and then cook it down, and then I run it through my food ricer and pop it in a jar. And I hot pack, so I just stick them in the refrigerator till I eat them all.
Mm. Some people make a cough syrup, or they do...
Oh, with black currant, huh?
And they like elderberry for that
as
well.
Yes, yes. Putting them together,
healthy.
I would think so, because the, you know, elderberry, which we're going to hit pretty soon...
August.
...is really, really, it's very good for coughs, but oh boy, does it... On its own, it doesn't taste very good. So I like to put some acidic fruit in with it, which often is blueberries or, I don't know, for me, the black currants are so precious, I hardly want to put them in the Sambucol cough syrup. Now, the other thing, Judy, did you know that one of the latest, hottest culinary trends is cooking with black currant leaf?
No. Didn't know that.
It's a good, you could use it in a tea even, but let's see, where did I have it? Oh, well, my Swedish neighbor, Ingrid Anderson, made a traditional Swedish, a schnapps kind of thing, where she takes the leaf of the black currant, not the red currant, and soaks it in vodka for a couple of weeks with a piece of lemon peel, and then it flavors it really, really nicely. And then I went out to... Stone Barns, which is sort of the epitome of the it restaurant on the planet, and they served me black currant leaf ice cream.
Oh, I like that.
I came home and made it, so it's just, it's like vanilla with one step further.
Is it an infusion? Did you have to?
I just took the milk, put it on the leaves, warmed it, you know, and then... I don't think I boiled it. I think I just let them steep like you would a tea. Mm. And then I, you know, processed it for ice cream.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was thinking I might try a panna cotta recipe with it, too. Same. Ooh. You could do whipped cream that way, too. Just infuse the leaves.
Oh, my. We bring in canes of black currants and put in vases because we just like that wonderful smell they
have. See, it's the smell. They mm-hmm. really, and so when you get that into your food, I bet we could make a black currant leaf syrup even.
Oh, we should try it.
Yeah, and then that would be an easy thing to use. Yeah, keep for storage. It would probably be very, very good.
That would be a nice try. I'd like something different like that.
Yeah, all right. We'll have an experiment, okay?
I like that.
But we are moving into the bounty of blueberry season.
We are, and we should make sure people know that they're just delightful to pick and more delightful to eat and use as you enjoy them at home.
And there's lots and lots of... I was looking through some of my more exotic cookbooks for kind of unusual flavors that you could stick into the blueberries. And the two things that kept coming up were kind of licorice-y flavored, which I have not tried. So I'm just throwing out there another experiment. But this one is from the Herb Farm Cookbook, and he's calling it a nectarine, blueberry, and anise basil shortcake.
Oh, my.
So, obviously, I would probably not use nectarines. Right now, we're starting to get decent peaches, even some Missouri peaches.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love peaches and blueberries.
Yes, they're a great combination.
And it is because I find that the bright yellow on the dark blueberry is so, so pretty. So what he did in this recipe, you know, just use your shortcake recipe with nectarines and blueberries. And he made a syrup by taking 4 4-inch sprigs of anise basil or Thai basil or 4-inch sprigs of sweet basil and adding to it, it's a French liqueur called Pernod or Ricard, which is a anise flavored, and that's optional, but basically he's putting these anise or Thai basils into a syrup and then pouring that onto the peach and blueberry mix that he then puts on the shortcake, and he serves it, he recommends it with, served with vanilla ice cream or cinnamon basil ice cream. So there you have a few exotic things you can try with all these wonderful blueberries. The sky's the limit there.
It is. But I hope people will just pick and snack and eat and enjoy them.
I think you should do everything with blueberries.
Right. A half a cup a day is what we want you to eat.
Get your antioxidants. Yes. And apparently blueberries freeze very well.
They do. You don't even wash them. You pour them into a freezer bag and freeze the amount you'll use in a recipe. 2 or 3 cups is usually a good measure, and enjoy them year round.
Have you tried drying them?
I haven't yet,
but I did read that. For drying, I did read that it's good to just put them very briefly in boiling water because it splits the skin enough and helps them to dry. Dried blueberries; they're wonderful, and I suspect. I mean, blueberries are a Native American crop.
Yes, they are.
So they have lived on this continent forever. And the Indians ate them and used them. The first settlers in New England found that they were abundant. And they ate them cooked with meat. And they dried them for use in winter.
So there they go. So they go way back.
They do. It's a natural American food that we can all enjoy. So, Judy, tell me what you do with the white currants. Have you ever done anything special with the white currants?
I really haven't.
I should probably
use them in something or mix them in something because they are very pretty, and you think, what can we do with these? Maybe some of our listeners would have an idea for us.
Okay. They're very rare.
Yeah.
And the flavor is similar to the red, right?
It's very plain on white ones. You don't get much flavor.
Uh-huh.
The red ones are children friendly. They will pick them and enjoy them.
But they're pretty sour.
Well, they look so pretty on the sprig, and the children will pick them off of the bush, and then they want to eat them, and that's good. Or you can float them in lemonade. But they just aren't something common that anyone knows about. So We're just hoping we get some more recipes for them.
Oh, I have to try and think what... They're so delicate. I'm sure as soon as you cook them, they probably kind of disappear.
Yep. And they are very good in jelly. If you have red currant jelly, you will enjoy it very much.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. For more information, go to www.khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about summer berries. That was a bit of audio that we recorded with Judy Henry way, way back in 2016. 2016! Not everything always works out. 2016, as Judy told us, was not a good year for strawberries. They had bad weather and had a very shy crop. And I'm glad this year it sounds like there's
been a good blueberry year.
Yep. That's how it works out. Some things are good, some things are bad. So we're still talking berries. And
we're hopeful. So far, Judy says that this year's strawberries are coming along, you know, unless we have hail or devastating rain and they get sogged out, you know. Yeah. But so far, it's looking good.
So far, so good. Well, there are still some things to consider to put underneath fruit. In that we just heard you talking about a cobbler using blueberries and peaches.
What was it? Licorice flavors.
Licorice,
you know what else would be good on that syrup? An anise hyssop. Ooh. Now, that does grow a lot. Don't you have some? I have some.
I have some. It always comes up late.
Anise hyssop syrup would be nice and on something like that. But, you know, I think the most exciting thing about this time of year is fruits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course we're going to love vegetables. When corn comes, we get excited, and the first tomatoes and the yada, yada, yada. But all summer long, we have fruits and fruits and fruits, and this is, you know, and it comes in succession. So we've hit the rhubarb mark, then the strawberries, then we'll have the cherries, then we'll be into more berries, and then peaches, and then plums, and then apples. And obviously desserts, pies, the usual thing I like. There are shortcakes, cobblers, crisps, and crumbles.
Ah, very good. Get ready for these things.
Well,
what's the difference, Donna?
There's some difference. Between a shortcake and a cobbler, for the shortcake, you actually bake the cake separately and you don't cook the berries, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a shortcake. But if you take almost the same dough, it could be a little more liquid, but doesn't have to be, and you put the fruit on the bottom of the pan with the sugar, maybe a little cornstarch, you know, and whatever, and then you put the biscuit dough on top and cook them all together, you end up with a cobbler. Like, I'm thinking this week, I still have some peaches left from last year. I'm thinking rhubarb peach cobbler.
Ah, that's a good combination.
Right.
Never thought of that.
And then you have your crisps and your crumbles.
Yes. Now, why is that different than a cobbler?
Well, I'm suspect crisp usually involves less dough and a little bit more like
crunchy stuff.
Yeah, like oats, but not always. Sometimes it's just you mix the flour and the butter, and you can put nuts in it, like almonds or something like that, and you sort of streusel it over so it's not as doughy and it bakes up a little crisper, as it were. Mm-hmm. And then crumble is, I think, a little British of the same sort of thing. Less doughy, mm-hmm. and more crispy, not necessarily having oats in it, but oats are a good, you know, a good thing. So all of those things they're considered really fast and easy ways to make a, you know, quick family dessert and a something that you know, your grandmother probably made.
And what this tells me is there's a wide window of things to put on. You can have really cakey or really crumbly, and get in there and play and enjoy and do
and,
enjoy.
And of course,
the food.
All of them are more wonderful if you put a little heavy cream on them.
Ice cream recipe.
Ice cream is good.
Oh, what is the how does one find the New York Times recipe? What's the googly bit for that?
I just Googled. What did I Google? Yes, the New York Times, the master ice cream recipe. Melissa Clark. And there's a video with it, which makes it absolutely foolproof. But it is, you know, the New York Times did not make this up. Hello, it's out there everywhere. But I like it because it is basic. It's basically a custard. You chill it, and then you churn it.
There you go. Yum. Well, I have a little bit of things to share here. Every now and then I like to read things. I found a nice collection of thoughts and thinking of summer and thinking of animals in the woods. I came across a little book of collective nouns, what we use nouns that we refer to the animal kingdom. And here's an example. We often talk about a charm of goldfinches. That's the group of goldfinches.
This is the title of the book?
Yes.
A Charm of Goldfinches Other Wild Gatherings.
Yeah. And there's just, it just kind of...
So a charm is a group of gold...
Like a herd of buffalo. You know,
a charm of goldfinch. Yeah. Well, they would be very charming.
Yeah. And I don't know where these came from, but they are in common usage, and this man named Matt Sewell has collected them into a sweet little book, and here's some of the things he's found. A sleuth of bears, a band of coyotes, a mob of emus, a memory of elephants, oh, that's a good one, a mural of buntings, a convocation of eagles, a skein of geese, a crown of kingfishers, a cloud of bats, a pod of pelicans, a trip of rabbits, a gaze of raccoons.
T-R-I-P. A trip of rabbits.
And here's one that's kind of course it would be called a plague of rats. That's, yeah, of course. A school of whales, a pod of dolphins, a shiver of sharks, a party of jays, a company of parrots, a pitying of turtle doves. Oh, yes, I can see that. And a flutter of butterflies. Yes.
A group of butterflies is called
a flutter. Isn't that lovely? Not that you have to use this. It just is a nice way of thinking about a group of things. And here is a little thing that is about peacocks. It's called an ostentation of peacocks. Now, there's a little footnote here. Because this only refers to peacocks, which is the male.
Not the peahens,
yeah.
Right.
The male is the one with the big tail that puts on just
the ostentatious.
You say an ostentation of peacocks, but if you are referring to peacocks in general, which includes the peahen, it is a muster. It is a muster of peafowl, which is peafowl.
Just
something we have to think about in case we want to have something to think about besides whatever else is going on in the news. Yes, there's a pride of lions, a leap of leopards, a down.
Sevens wants a swimming, six gets a lady.
And that too. A skulk of foxes. I like
that. We have skulks of foxes around Ames now. Whoa.
A kettle of hawks.
An Exaltation of Larks. I think that's in a poem someplace. That makes sense. A Pot of Pelicans, A Murder of Crows, and A Quarrel of Sparrows. Yeah, you can see that. You can see that. So this is from a little book called A Charm of Goldfinches and Other Wild Gatherings, Quirky Collective Nouns from the Animal Kingdom, and the author is Matt Sewell. So that's a nice thing to think about. Yes, it is. Well, we've been talking about berries today, summer berries.
The fruit is coming, the fruit is coming.
Let's enjoy it all. Yes, there's some things to enjoy this summer, and one of the things we can enjoy in Iowa here is events put on by Practical Farmers of Iowa. They have just come out with their 2022 Field Day Guide, and that means that you can visit a farm, and it's not just all corn and beans out there, folks. There are farmers doing all kinds of wonderful things, and it's fun to go to a field day. You get to walk around and see how things are done, and flowers and sheep and mushrooms and different ways of harvesting and gathering, managing weeds.
Flower farming.
Yes, all kinds of things. And you don't need to be a farmer to attend these things. Go to practicalfarmers.org on the website and find out lots more. This organization connects farmers with farmers, but it also connects farmers with eaters. Actually, a good chunk of their ever-growing membership are people that are not farmers at all. They are consumers. They are interested in what they eat. And so it's a fine organization, and it grows and grows. So go to practicalfarmers.org.
And there are lots of them, and they are all over the state, and they run into October at the latest. So we will be talking about more of these, specifically ones that have things for the eaters among us.
It all comes down to eating, but so, you know, some are about how to maintain your tractor. You may not want that, but you may want that. So it's a good source of information. And I noticed this year they have some protocols for keeping especially livestock farms healthy. They require clean shoes and don't show up
this
in dirty.
Is because the
wear clean clothes, wear clean shoes or boots. Especially, you know, we've had the poultry problems here, and there's hogs and there's pigs, and you want to make sure to not bring anything else onto the farm. So good. Well, Donna, tell us about Donna Lana Kitchen and the fact that we have a podcast now.
Oh boy. It's the same as the radio show. So if you've listened to the radio show, you don't need to listen to the podcast. Or if you're somewhere where you can't get the radio show and you want to listen to the podcast, or you want to tell your cousin so-and-so or Aunt Mary or blah, 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 people who listen to podcasts can now find us wherever they listen to podcasts. It's basically the same content as the radio show, including us singing the introduction. So you go to wherever you listen to podcasts and you type in to the search Donna Lana Kitchen. Now, Donna Lana is one word and kitchen is the second word, and you will come up with our podcast. And this has been co-produced by Practical Farmers of Iowa. Thank you very much.
Yes, they helped us get a grant to do this, and our mission is to get information about eating out to the public.
How to eat healthy local foods, and of course, we want to encourage you to cook your own, like make your own chocolate sauce. Hello.
Your own fruit cobbler. One of those food groups, the chocolate sauce. Yes.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you on KHOY Community Radio. We come to you live at noon. And like Donna says, we're on a podcast now, too. We've had music today by the Barn Owl Band. Support this fine community radio station. My name is Lana Noctigo.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy.
Eat good food and enjoy life.
Thank you.